Well, good morning again. Hopefully I can make it through the rest of the service without tripping over myself. It's kind of like the JV team up here today or something. Nevertheless, if we could, I can't see who's working the projector. If we could have the text from Luke 14. This is one of those passages or moments from Jesus' life, thank you, where there's a bunch of things that happen all at once. And by way of setting things up, there are two things we need to know. The first is that it's very, very rare, and potentially it just never happens, that Jesus just goes around giving advice. And I say that because it seems like, as we are reading through this, that Jesus is just sitting there giving advice to people at a dinner party. And there's an element to that. There's an element of wisdom. But to put it mildly, the Roman government does not execute people who just go around giving advice. And instead, I would argue, and we'll see how that plays out here, that Jesus is couching, we'll just say good advice or a little bit of wisdom, in a much bigger, broader story. Because rather than giving advice, Jesus' intention is to announce something new that God is doing. So we'll see how that plays out. And then secondly, as we go through this, and if you ever find yourself reading from the stories of Jesus' life in the Bible, so the Gospels, if you're reading Luke, it's important to know that Luke is more sensitive to the diversity within the group known as the Pharisees. If you read like Matthew and Mark, they're very much anti-Pharisee, and there was a large contingency of Pharisees that had kind of earned that. But in general, the Pharisees were a very, very righteous, very, very disciplined, very knowledgeable group of people who worked very hard and become part of this group of like populist religious leaders. And some of them were astonishingly wonderful people, and some of them really hated Jesus for the wrong reasons. And Luke seems to be aware of that tension and that diversity more than others. John is also kind of on Luke's side of that coin. And we'll see how that plays out here. So it says, one Sabbath, so Saturday, when he went to dine, Jesus went to dine at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees. They were watching him carefully. So some important, prominent member of the Pharisee party has invited this famous, rapidly expanding reputation of a preacher, teacher, healer, prophetic voice. You can put a lot of labels on Jesus, and they're pretty much all true all at the same time. But it's interesting that he invites Jesus. And that should tell us at least a certain level of interest and identification. Like, the Pharisees in the story are not necessarily the bad guys. Now, it does say they're watching him carefully. That's pretty neutral. We're kind of accustomed to reading that in a negative way, but my sense is that they're genuinely interested in what Jesus has to say. Or at least they really want to hear him out. So, behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. I have no idea why ESV, a modern English translation, would use the word dropsy. My like millennial ears hear dropsy and immediately think, no one's had that since 1850. What is going on? For what it's worth, dropsy, hudropikos in Greek, it's just edema, it's swelling. The buildup of fluid, that's actually hudropikos, hydro, water, it's all a really nerdy etymology. We're not going to get into that. Basically, this poor guy is just sitting here really swollen. There is a sense in the ancient world that if you had edema, you were greedy. Now, we don't see that here. But it's pretty likely that Luke has got it on his mind. So the man here is maybe questionable, but he is certainly miserable. And so Jesus responds to the lawyers, that is not attorneys, that's experts in Jewish law, and the Pharisees, who are also experts in Jewish law. And again, Jesus asks, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Now, this seems like a silly question to us, and that's because this question has been answered for just about 2,000 years. Because of course you would. But for them at this time, there was a pretty intense debate, and you can see this in like the writing from that time, because healing is work, and they are commanded not to work on the Sabbath. It's a rule. In fact, it's one of the most important rules, especially at that time. And there was a lot of disagreement. And you get in the like record of Jewish writing, pretty quick after Jesus' life, you see that this question has been resolved with the answer, yes, it's okay to heal somebody on the Sabbath. Now, Jesus doesn't get credit, but the timing lines up pretty well. They probably just don't want to name him as the guy who figured it out. And there's some good reason for that. But anyway, so he asked that question. That's such a loaded question. It's ridiculous. And they wisely are just quiet. And just a little bit of wisdom. I like to tell this to the middle school kids when I teach them. If you find yourself in a really weird, tough situation, you always can just say nothing. And that's often going to be better than saying anything. That's supposed to be kind of funny. Only Kelly and I are on the same wavelength here. All right. But yes, saying nothing keeps you from saying something stupid. So, Jesus then takes him and heals him. And considering this guy is like really swollen, that healing was probably evident very quickly. And then he sends him away. And then Jesus turns to them to teach. He says, which of you having a son or an ox that falls into a well on a Sabbath day will not immediately pull him out? And they could not reply to these things. Now, sometimes you read the Bible, and this is definitely one of those times where Jesus says something like, okay, hey, if you've got a kid or an ox and they fall into a ditch or a well, aren't you going to pull them out even if it's Sabbath? And somehow that resolves the matter. And we in the modern world are left going, I've missed something important. It's like going to a museum of modern art. Like, I'm not getting it, whatever it is. Now, he is arguing with a style of logic that's very, very familiar to a first century Jewish audience. The fancy term is kol v'chomer, light and heavy, which again is like, we're missing things. And the logic is, if something is true for something that is not as big of a deal or not as important, then how much more is it going to be true if that thing is very, very important? So in this case, it's not that big of a deal to pull an animal who got stuck in a ditch, or your kid who tripped and fell into it, or a well in this case. Like, that's not that big of a deal. Everybody's going to do it. How much more important is the well-being and potential life of a human? The answer is a lot. That's way more important. So if you would do it in a little case like that, why wouldn't you do that in a bigger case? That's the logic there. And they could not reply to these things because Jesus is just right. He has a tendency to do that. Now, there's something intensely practical, I think, that we can pull from this. Because the logic of what Jesus says works if we assume that a human being made in the image of God is extremely important. Hopefully we can all just agree on that. And the reason why this is really, really important is that the danger with the whole, like, do you heal somebody on the Sabbath or not, is that it misses the forest for the trees. It gets so focused on individual rules or situations that you forget that there's an actual human being with a whole story and life and family and friends standing right in front of you. And in a world and in an era that has a tendency to vilify everybody who steps out of line from any perspective, it's easy to forget the human behind what you are seeing. And hopefully this isn't too controversial, but a really, really good example, and I was just reading something the other day that reminded me of this, in talking about the Ukraine and Russian war. It's easy to vilify, and it's really important, lest we lose a sense of our own humanity, to remember these are human beings behind all this. There are human beings acting incredibly evil and incredibly heroic, and there's all a certain level of dignity there because they are humans. And maybe it's important that we're careful about how we think and how we treat them. And this can apply to every other aspect of our lives. It's easy to say, let's forget those people, or those people, they don't need our help, but yeah, they probably do, or the people that we just really don't like. Remember the human. That's important. In fact, that may be one of the most important things. Now, Jesus moves on in that same dinner party setting. Now, he tells a parable. Luke is very very loose with the definition of parable. Parable is usually like a story with a narrative arc. This is going to come across like advice. So, he's telling this to those who were invited. When he noticed how they chose the places of honor, so basically seating arrangements, saying to them, when you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this person, and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. Modern words, or in the modern world, maybe it's like, at the wedding, don't sit at the wedding party's table. That's ludicrous. Why would you do that? You're invited to a Thanksgiving meal at a friend's house. Don't sit at the head of the table. Now, that's less a big deal depending on whose house you're at, but it would still be weird. Now, interestingly enough, Jesus is not saying anything new. If you notice during the Old Testament reading in the book of Proverbs, they just say, don't pick the good seat when you're in the presence of nobles and stuff like that, because then you're going to look like a complete fool when they say, hey, you can't sit here. So then Jesus says, when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now, I'm not going to lie, this is really good advice. Just practically speaking, sit a little lower than where you think you should be, and then it will be a good look for you if you are kind of moved up to a better spot, and don't sit in a place that's special. That's just asking for trouble. But again, Jesus really isn't the type to just give good advice, even though this is really good advice. And also, he didn't make this up. This is from the book of Hebrew wisdom. So what is he doing here? Well, if we go along with this idea that when Jesus gives advice, it is tied to him giving good news or giving an announcement that God is doing something special, we'll recall that Jesus has this tendency, and Luke as narrator and editor is very keen on pointing this out all over the place. that those who should be up here in this new thing God is doing that Jesus is announcing are moved down to here, and those who are down on the low ends of the social spectrum are raised up to places of honor. It's this great reversal, and once you have eyes to see this, especially in Luke, it's all over the place. Because, as it turns out, in the economy of God, somebody's value is determined in ways that are very different from our own. Which leads to another question. How do we value ourselves and other people? Like, what's the rubric? What's the measurement? Like wealth, education, large social networks, talent, social fluency, where they live, what kind of house they have, what kind of car they drive, accomplishments, people who just happen to like the same stuff that I like. Like if you ever notice, if somebody is talking about somebody in a way that they really like them, what they're probably saying is they like the same things that I like and they hate the same things that I hate. In other words, we have, as just people, all kinds of complicated ways to divide people up into those who are on the higher end and those who are on the lower end, or those who I'd really like to be associated with and those that I would not want to be caught dead with. And what Jesus is saying here is that in this kind of weird, surprising, radical thing that God is now doing through him in these moments, those who find themselves on that lowest level are raised up. And so the advice is, don't get too big for your britches, as I think we'd say in Texas. But the reality is, be humble. Because God is interested in those who understand who they really are. And for us to understand who we really are, we have to see how we are standing in the presence of God. Because who would take a nice place, a nice seat right next to God? That would be crazy. Now, hold all of those thoughts because it's going to come up again. So Jesus said to the man who had invited him. So this would be the host, the owner of the house, almost certainly, who is sitting at the head of the table. When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. Bold thing to say, because that's probably what the guy did. Jesus is traveling right now, and if there's a well-known teacher and you have the honor of hosting him for dinner, you are going to invite the best people in the village because this makes you look really good. And even further, in the ancient world, and this does exist today, even though it's harder to see sometimes, now everybody who's at that dinner owes him. This is how it plays out in our day. You go out to dinner with some other people, like couples or something like that. And then that awkward moment at the end of that dinner, the check arrives, and everyone jockeys for who, whatever, and because it'd be weird if we just said split it, and all right, no. Boom, I got it. No, I'll get it. And then what does the other couple think? Next time, yes. Because now, in our weird, unspoken cultural dynamic, that couple's in debt. They owe them. And it's got to be at least as nice. Like, if we go to Los Poblanos, don't take me out to, Taco Cabana or something like that. No. We are not even. That's like three Taco Cabana trips. Man, I want some Taco Cabana. All right, anyway. But that's the dynamic that Jesus is pulling out right there. And that's a dynamic that everyone would be familiar with in that moment. So Jesus is saying this. It might be awkward. It might not be. But it's the same with us. And then Jesus says, but when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just or righteous or something like that. This is actually really, really deeply connected with the little pseudo-parable that he had just said. Honor those who can't honor you back. Give to those who can't give back because they really need it. And in this new economy of God, they're the ones that God wants to honor and raise up. Because we tend to think of status in all of the many complicated ways that we calculate people's status and worth. We think of it in terms of something that we have earned, or we have done, some quality about us that gives us that status. And yet Jesus has this crazy radical idea, and he will, whenever he gives advice, he will use that as an opportunity to announce that something has changed. But in any case, Jesus has this unique quality that he is so convinced that when God is finally doing what he's doing, which he is doing now, in that moment, as Jesus is on earth, that the whole economy, the whole social ladder is flipped upside down. And that is terrible news if you are the ones in power and you really like being in that position. For those who really like the status, this is not good news. And spoiler alert, they're the ones that get him killed because they sort of see the implications. But that doesn't stop Jesus. Because in that process of Jesus continually living out this reality that in this new kingdom, this new world that God is beginning with Jesus, how the lowest people, the people who do not deserve it, the misfits, the people who've made terrible mistakes or are untalented or unable or not as handsome as, my mind just went blank. I can't think of anybody good looking. Whatever. Christian Bale. All right. Yeah, he's a pretty handsome guy. Batman. Man, Batman's pretty cool too. We'll go with Christian Bale. But even if you're not as handsome as that. But in the new economy, that's the one who is valued. And Jesus is so set on making this the reality that he will take it to its furthest possible conclusion, challenging those with the most power, knowing that he is going to die in that process. And yet, 3 days after that happens, he walks out of that tomb. And he begins the long process that will be permeated by what you can read on the screen behind me, the resurrection of the just. That reality has already broken in. And as the church, we have sought to live that out for 2,000 years. Sometimes we've done it well, and sometimes we have not done it well, and that's just because we're all human. But sprinkled among this advice about being conscious of not placing yourself in a position where people will owe you, not maneuvering so that you can kind of manipulate some good things out of people, not constantly trying to jockey for your place as a high status, high value person. Amidst all of that advice, we then can start to see through the right lens that in the kingdom that Jesus is beginning, our status and our worth is given to us. It is not earned. That the death that Jesus dies is the one that we deserve. So the highest value person giving himself up for the lowest value people. And then, by defeating even death itself, he begins this new era. And so Jesus' advice is just what he's announcing. In Jesus, you are given that status. Your sins are forgiven. You are given immeasurable value. Why immeasurable? Because it cost Jesus. And in that light, we now go and just live that reality out. In as much generosity as we are able, by valuing those that the rest of the world sees as untouchable. By also thinking about ourselves less and about those around us more. Knowing that in this new economy, that's what God has intended for us. That's a much better way to live. Amen. As you are able, I invite you to rise.